B-Pod Studios.
Jeff, week one's in the books. It was an interesting week around the NFL for the Eagles as well. But let's start with Malik Jackson. What's the latest there? I know Doug said yesterday I needed more tests and more info about potentially making a roster move and all the fallout.
Yeah, I still haven't heard anything yet from the team or for any of my sources. So as far as I know right now, same thing. Significant injury, he'll be out for an extended period. And they're doing more tests to before they come to a final conclusion on what he has. Obviously, he's going to need to be replaced for a little while here. So whether they put him on IR and are able to bring him back later in the season remains to be seen. But I think more than anything, we're going to see a roster move here over the next few days.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. I do. I think you're right about that. Let's go back. Let's go down. You see the tape yet?
I started to watch it a little bit this morning. I haven't got all the way through.
Okay. All right. Just curious what you thought. Let's start off with the defense. Let's start off with the because we know the obvious. The obvious was how great the offense, how great Carson played.
Deshaun.
Deshaun was ridiculous. I mean, this offense can be just flat out scary. You agree with that, obviously?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think we saw kind of the full fury of what this offense can be in the second half, a brief moment in the first half as well. I mean, I think, again, 30 points a game is not out of the question for this offense. With all the weapons they have, and as long as everyone stays healthy.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm completely with you. All right, so let's look at the defense. What did you see defensively? And I'm just curious, who played well for you? Like, who did you see? We were just talking about, because I was talking to Baldy Watson tape, and he thought Barnett was really good, especially in the second half. What did you give me your pluses and minuses on defense?
Yeah, I don't think anyone in particular stood out. I mean, I think Fletcher Cox, by the second half, you started to see a little more pressure out of him, and the same with Derek Barnett. Now, of course, at that point, when the Redskins were trailing, they could pin their ears back and, provide some pressure, although they never really kind of scored with a sack, so that was a little bit of a disappointment. The corners were okay. Each of them had a pass breakup, but each of them had mistakes as well. Particularly Ronald Darby. I think he was the one who was responsible for that blown assignment on the 69-yard touchdown pass. And then you had a few missed tackles, certainly the one on the first touchdown by Vernon Davis. You had three guys couldn't bring him down. So that was disappointing to see. Now, that may be a little bit of, first game jitters or the fact that they hadn't played in preseason a bunch of these guys, and you had certainly several players, four of them coming back from significant injury. I think that had something to do with the early slow start by the defense. But, look at the run stoppage. They really didn't give up anything there. That's important. Obviously, you want to be able to force teams to be one-dimensional. Problem is, the pass defense wasn't good enough. And you're going to see better offensive lines than the ones that the Redskins had. You're going to see better quarterbacks, and you're going to see better receivers. So I think that's certainly a cause for concern as the Eagles move ahead here.
And Jeff McClain in Philadelphia Inquirer covers the Eagles, also Inquirer.com on the Comcast Business Hotline. Jeff, you mentioned yesterday when Doug had his day-after press conference that with Malik Jackson, the roster move, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be a defensive tackle, but they could look for an outside pass rusher. And you mentioned Chris Long. Connor Barwin's a guy we mentioned on the show. What's the direction you think they would go if it's kind of confirmed that he's going to be out for a good lengthy period of time?
Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of up in the air on this one because they made a concerted effort to go out and get Malik because they felt like maybe the DNs were being a little too taxed by moving inside on rushdowns. But they also got one of the best inside pass rushers as a defensive end, Michael Bennett. But they said, okay, this will allow Brandon Graham to be more on the outside. But again, he can do that. One of the best plays in franchise history was him rushing from the inside and sacking and forcing a fumble of Tom Brady in the Super Bowl. Vinny Curry, to me, is a better inside pass rusher than he is an outside guy. So you can move those guys inside, and if you were to bring back somebody like Chris Long or Connor Barwin, you'd add to what I think right now is just a little bit of a question mark. The defensive end unit, I've been pounding the story all offseason when they traded Michael Bennett and when they basically set in motion Chris Long's retirement. I didn't think they did enough to upgrade there. I do like Derek Barnett. Certainly, I love Brandon Graham, but I don't think they have a hellraiser on the edge. And whether that's you know, someone that can come off the bench and be your high motor guy like Chris Long, because that's what he is. He's a pass rush specialist at this point. I think you'd upgrade by doing that, because I just don't see right now Josh Sweat or Sharif Miller or Deshaun Hall being that guy.
Yeah.
That being said, you know, they have Tim Dernigan and they have you know, Bruce Hector, Hassan Ridgeway. Bruce Hector can bring off the practice squad. Maybe now they regret a little bit of letting Trayvon Hester go, or they can pick up somebody off the street. But really, defensive tackles, good ones, are generally not on the street. You can pick up some edge rusher guys. And I don't know if it's going to be Chris Long. I think Chris Long, schematically, is a better fit than Connor Barwin. Connor's just a 3-4 outside linebacker. He can play in the skin, he can do it, but is he going to be that fireball off the bench when you want him on third down?
Great leadership from Long.
Will we wind up having...
Both guys are good leaders. But, yeah. Ahead, I'm sorry.
Will we wind up having Clowney regret?
We already do.
That's a fair question.
I mean, that's a fair question. Because, you know, you look at the compensation of what the Seahawks gave up, it was a fair amount, but it wasn't an obscene amount.
Right.
And, again, and I don't know if you guys were on board with me on this, I just didn't like what they did at defensive end in the offseason.
Yeah, I agree. I feel you.
Especially for a team that doesn't like the blitz.
I think you're right. How does the more important question is, what about the secondary? What do you see? I mean, Sidney Jones did not look good, and Darby was being poor tackling, and you know, he had that pick right there. What how's the secondary play out?
Well, I was asked in our preview section, you know, what's the one area of weakness for the Eagles, the biggest glaring weakness, and I had quarterback. And again, I think all these guys have the capabilities to play in the NFL, but they're still, the three younger guys are still learning. So you're going to have mistakes, especially at that position where you're just exposed all the time, and certainly sometimes in Jim's scheme as well. That being said, Jim doesn't blitz a lot. So it's not like these guys are always on an island. There is safety help and they should be able to perform better. But this defense is predicated on getting pressure up front. You have to have those front four guys getting pressure. We didn't see it again on Sunday as much as we probably should have. And that puts those guys in a bind in a lot of ways because they can't hold up for so long. Look, I think once Fletcher Cox gets his sea legs back, you're going to start seeing him be the Fletcher Cox that we know. And I think same with Derek Barnett, we're going to see his gradual improvement. And again, I like Graham, I like Curry, but I just don't see, besides Fletcher, but you want it on the edges. You certainly want it on the edges, and I just don't see that guy. And now that you're out, you're going to be going on Malik Jackson, who's supposed to like take the double teams away from Fletcher Cox. Yeah. You're like, oh boy, you know what's going to happen to this offensive line, and that's supposed to be the wheelhouse of this defense.
97.5, The Fanatic, Gargano and Mertitus middays.
Hey Jeff, I know you did an article about the picket fence defense. First of all, what qualifies as the picket fence defense? Because I know your article, I think it was 38 out of 38 when Jim Schwartz has gone into that. And, you know, Anthony and I just talked about it. You don't force pressure. You don't force turnovers. You give up field position because, like, if it's third and 16, you give up 11 yards. And you never can, you know, use it as a momentum swing in a game by making a big play instead of just a bit of a passive approach. So, first of all, what qualifies as pick and fence defense?
Well, basically, I think a lot of people think just Jim's general soft coverages are just they throw it under one category, pick and fence defense. No, there's obviously so many different schemes and coverages that Jim or any defensive coordinator will use. And the pick and fence, the sticks one, as he likes to call it, that basically just line up your back to seven at the sticks or just before the sticks. And maybe you'll have a deep safety about 5 or 2 yards or something like that behind them to be that last line of defense. And typically he uses it on 3rd and 14 or 4th and 14 and longer. And that's what I did. That's how I took the numbers out. I did anything beyond 14 yards to go.
Okay. Because I was kicking myself. I'm going, wait a second. Because I know that it's been, you know, I've seen them give up 3rd and 9,
yeah, Carolina,
10, 11, you know.
Oh, I mean, they've given that up before. But those are like, you know, whatever, cover 4, cover 2, right. A hybrid of the inverted. Like, they, again, everyone's like, what about the Titans game?
And
Corey Graham, when I'm like, no, they were actually in a mix of cover 2 inverted and cover 3. They kind of split that defense there. It wasn't the sticks defense. And that's what, and then Jim had been questioned about that last year. And he said, no, that's just not the sticks defense. And look, I mean, obviously we're getting a little particular here, but that's how they look at the defense. And I want to be specific about when we're talking about this detail.
I think you're right to do that. No, you are right to do that.
Right, and the only time, like there was one time in the Jacksonville game in London where they gave up, I think, 16 yards on like 3rd and 21, and that was long enough for them to try a field goal, 55 yards, 56 yards, something like that, or 57 yards, and they made it. So, you know, I qualify that as a loss. And Jim had said, you know, if they had gotten 1 yard or 1 foot or fourth down, it would have qualified as a loss as well. But and the Cowboys were about to do that in the game last year, but they went for it and they had a false start. So they end up lucky. They got lucky there. So it was 37 for 37. They did it once yesterday. Sunday. It was 38 for 38. But then they did it on 3rd and 12, I think, against the Redskins in that last drive and gave up a long first down. Now, again, that's totally in prevent defense mode there. They had the game won in hand, two-score game. You kind of understand why you play that scheme. And people have to understand, every defensive coordinator, while not using the six defense, plays soft coverage on 3rd and 15 alone. Very rarely will you blitz or will you do something to pressure. But the argument against, and I get this, is the field position one, and then can you force a turnover? That's fine, but there's a risk-reward there. You got to be willing to take the risk there. If you do happen to give up a big play or one down the field.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's all about, what philosophy you subscribe. Now, you know how close I am with Steve Spagnuolo, right? So Spags and I mean.
And Jim. I mean, Jim Spags, we were
on a beach this summer and we're talking about coverages and talking about defense and the whole philosophy about pressures. And now he does different types of exotic pressures and he's a more believer in that than Schwartz. But that said, what his belief is, and I think this is what fans convey, they believe in the energy of defense and the energy on a 3rd and long. And, you know, it's not just pressures, but it's also not giving up, 11 yards on a 3rd and 14. You know what I mean? It's that whole thing of energy and momentum that I think comes into play. I think that's what fans get frustrated. That's why I'm not in love with the way I think Jim Schwartz is a professional, right? Like, he's a professional DC. He knows what he's doing. But I like it better when you push the envelope a little bit.
Absolutely. It's a philosophical thing. And certainly in this city, after Buddy and after Jim Johnson, guys who love the blitz. I mean, I remember talking to Wade Phillips at one Super Bowl, and he joked about how, but you know, when he was calling the plays, Buddy always be like, blitz up, first down. I want you to blitz.
Yep.
Like, and that's just kind of what Philadelphia likes. Jim will do that certain games, but he figures that, with my front four, we have all of our almost tax dollars invested in those guys. Let's utilize them. Let's give the back seven, defenders some support with linebackers, et cetera, and two safeties, and let's go with four pass rushers. That being said, again, there's other coverages that he's used in those 3rd and longs, et cetera. I give up about the same amount of yards as that 60 defense, and I know it bugs people to look at it. But yeah, I guess I understand your point of view as well, is that maybe pressure there sometimes, blitz somewhere, force a turnover, see if you can get there. It's different philosophies to some extent. And look, I think Jim has done a good job, but I don't love all this stuff. I hate that cover two inverted that he used.
Yes.
That, especially Ronald Darby's coming off injury. Yeah. How much has it stayed? And he got burnt there. He got burnt last year on the same exact play.
Same exact play. Yep. Tight end. Yep.
So some things that Jim deserves some blame for the stuff he calls. I don't like it when he says, well, the plays are plays and you have to execute. If you don't execute, then it's on the execution. Well, sometimes you call the wrong play.
Yeah. I agree. One quick bright note. The offensive line was just tremendous. Who'd you think stood out and what are your thoughts overall?
Peters and Brooks, two guys that maybe I had question marks just because Brooks is coming off the Achilles. He played 55 snaps. And Peters, because of his age. And there was a point there when he got down on one knee, and you're like, oh, boy, here we go again. But he stayed in and just did a Jason Peters-type job out there at left tackle. And Elaine and Kelsey and Isaac, maybe they had their ups and downs, but they were good as well. And over the long haul, you're going to love that unit. I mean, that unit is very strong, and they should be able to get yards on the ground, and they should be able to protect Carson as they did on Sunday.
No doubt. Hey, Jeff, week one's in the books. We on to week 2, man. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
A lot of fun, man. Great talk.
Bye, guys.
I love it.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.